Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about the software Truth Guard, which I'm working on. It's at the end result of what I'm working on with this automatic app software. And firstly, there's sort of a couple of things about what a Truth Guard is, why you'd want it, and then I suppose the implementation, but also seeing it in the history of truth guards in general. There's a general trend in human civilization for us to be a bit more savvy about the truth, and it's a world which is always changing. So, what is a truth guard? So, essentially, at a particular situation, I say social situation, people come together and there's a problem. And depending on social status, someone of relatively high social status will say, and I will actually discuss a individual politician and apply this to him, but overall he's sort of, I don't know, in terms of a star politician, even though I don't necessarily agree with his politics, I'd have to rate him probably 4 stars out of a 5-star rating system. He is effective. He does do the actual democratic thing. Like if your constituents and you ask him to do something, he will follow it up. So that's a big plus things. And he's obviously trying to balance a democracy of all these competing interests. So he's okay. And we will discuss him later on. But what is the truth guard? You have a situation, and the information is unclear, and the information is dependent on intent and certainty. And the intent and certainty, therefore, requires someone with authority to make a promise, to say, I will do this, this will happen, a guarantee. And this is actually, you know, codified now in contracts and professionalism. There's a whole series of things that we have brought in to say that a combination of the contract says this, your professionalism says this, but in real life, to navigate a group of testy people through a complex thing where you've got multiple ways to go, if you can actually get your promises out there and people can trust in it and believe in it, so there's enough people, if you make a promise and say in a group of 10 people, you're one person, you make a promise, and then 4 people say, yes, I believe it, that will be enough to swing it. So it's sort of a mathematics of promises to go up across. Now, of course, what happens is there's a certain amount of mental effort to understand what the promise is, and a certain amount of mental memory to remember what exactly that promise was. Now, if you can subtly, therefore, move the promise, either deliberately or circumstances move the promise, things have moved on, that promise which is made in this set of circumstances can no longer apply because the circumstances have changed, different people are in, that present goes, you are relying on a lack of memory to go ahead. And if people object, if they can be outside that majority of people, you can actually ride along. So there's a, sort of like a promise trajectory, and people can actually go in and read this and actually be quite effective people, and they can be quite good people and practical people, but you know, their promise isn't a stable thing. It doesn't last forever. So it's got a use-by date about it. It's got a promise given under a certain group of people understanding there in the room. When those people disperse, that promise can slowly drift aside. I know it sounds sinister, but I can see sort of some practical ways. I can sort of see a mathematics of how that person makes the promise and what they're thinking. Nash in game theory sort of said if I say I'll do this, I'll get another reaction. It's all these complex thing of game theory, and essentially game theory. What's it? Tallahassee or something. There's a very famous thing where no one wants an outcome, but everyone winds up doing it because no one can actually work their way out of this mathematics. So the mathematics of thinking can decisions can actually lead to some screwy decisions, and it can be for the uninitiated. It's really hard to actually navigate this mathematics, and you can actually go for a force of being charismatic and getting people to yell and shout and push it, and you can use different tactics. You can say, if you do this, I'll write letters to the, well, I can get these people to say this. You can really invest in doing it. Well, perhaps there's another way. And this is what we're looking at. So I'm not saying this is the way that's happening is bad, but there is another way. And so from a scientific point of view, it's you go, oh, there's another way. Let's look at this. Another class of mathematics. There's five classes of numbers. There's sort of natural numbers, real numbers, algebraic numbers, transcendental numbers. You go, previously in history, people were really upset about that idea. So I think the Pythagoreans in history were really upset with those different styles of numbers. So really, in a sense, there's different styles of how you have a system, not a system of justice, but a system of promises and how that's managed. And what I'm going to propose is an electronic system of managing a promise, and I'll say exactly what will happen, and then before we go, that's an interesting development, I'll then step back and say, look, you know, what's happened in human history and why there's a natural progression. But bear in mind that people's viewpoint is that, well, this is the way it goes. I've committed to people, I've made promises, I've done things, I've put on a dress or a suit just to for an occasion, I've said these things, I've done these things in order to get these promises happening, and you're telling me that there's a different way of doing it, that there's a sort of this restriction, and this is only a natural thing to do. So it's happened in almost every class of knowledge as it's coming forward. So if someone makes a promise, say for several years ago, and you build your solutions forward from that promise, you have an investment, you set your holidays up a certain way, you take a career decision in a certain path based on that promise. Now, the situation changes for that person, but he or she can't see the full extent of that promise, because that's sort of the nature of who they are and how they operate and how they are the key promise makers. So there are people who are promise makers and they have attributes which have been optimized for this system of power play, politics and stuff like that. But that person at a later date practically says, look, time's moved on, I'm no longer going to do this. Or did I say that? Or no one keeps it, you know, whatever it is. And they do the promise. They say they're going to break that promise. Now what can that happen is that when that is broken, that can be detected and automatically SMS and email everyone who's affected by it. And so if at the end of the day this is going to affect you in 6 months' time and make sure you're going out of business, A, you'll know about it. B, you can actually question them. You can actually have the, you can reignite or rebuild the solidness going forward. And so look, there are these people that can see, will I get a consequence of it? Will I actually, there are these groups which are well organized that affect me. How can I actually move across? And they're thinking of a network of promises. And so this is an idea that you can actually build a structure such that it detects a promise is broken and actually notifies people who are hurt by it. So this often happens that someone sneaks through a piece of legislation and it goes through and it changes things. It may not be basically laws are a promise about how society will operate. You know, it's an official official promise that someone can actually soften something up and it can have an immediate effect downstream, or a new piece of technology can come up and fundamentally change your business case. You have that SMS. Now the way the sort of hand waving way of saying it, that this is such a complex thing. Oh, it's going to be done by artificial intelligence. And I sort of love artificial intelligence because it people don't question whether artificial intelligence works. They know it's not working at the moment, but it will work. And so they've just suddenly, oh, well, I think I can, oh, there's a bit of a wall, and I'm going to really breathe incredibly hard. I'm just going down to this creek, and that's a huge, just... killer. I don't know, it's 200 meters going up and down. I'm walking down 200 meters in this brief time. Can you believe that? And I don't know if you can hear the frogs. And that frog is, I don't know, I thought I could recognize what type of frog that is. I think that's just a garden. No, I think that's actually not the garden variety frogs. There's these, you know, pretty robust, the cockroach version of frogs, and I think that's actually a wild, wild frog. Okay, getting back to it. We are sitting in a situation that look, I'm going to have a rest here and talk about it. It's hard because there's no light here, and there's only starlight to actually. Get you going. It's a moon. There's no moon. It's just pure starlight. And obviously, Sydney is a sort of a huge amount of glow to get through. You don't get the full total blackness with you a bit further out in the bush. The great thing about artificial intelligence is that it's a faith thing. People don't know how it works. That's, people really don't know how it works. But somehow these computers can do it. So somehow we can think of a solution. So really artificial intelligence is a bit like the way people are liberated and motivated by believing in God, you know, in religion. They don't know how it's going to work, but God will help them solve the problem ahead. So that sort of... It really, when you look at philosophy, the belief in God has really opened it up. So artificial intelligence is, one way we can say is, look, artificial intelligence can record someone's comment, and somehow this black box of artificial intelligence will actually SMS us. There's a sort of different type of intelligence. There's many different types of intelligence, there's human intelligence, and it's sort of like there's linear people who have got one sort of processor, can work on one thing at a time. There are other people who can actually work on several things at the same time, which can be disconcerting. You can be working along, and then all of a sudden there's sort of, oh, I've got to interrupt you. There's the solution, and you say, oh, thanks. But, yeah, where'd that come from? But what I was going to say is that there's human intelligence, and we are beginning to augment it with social intelligence. So I would say social intelligence would be laws, concepts like professionalism, a professional code to limit, to make people accountable for a promise, and contracts. And I want to go back a bit in time, start to go back in time before I start to talk about something, an idea of which is synthetic intelligence. This is sort of a cross between human intelligence and computer intelligence, and it's not artificial intelligence, it's synthetic intelligence. So you might say that might be the closest that you probably get to it is databases or big data or something like that, synthetic intelligence. But what I want to talk about is that before, promises were really, really important, and people would make an oath, and the oath would be, I will do that, or I will die, or I will just break an oath, and I'll be, I have social capital, My oath means that what I say is invested with the social capital there. And so, and this is back before reprinted records and contracts and stuff like that. You'd rely on people making oaths. And one of the few things is that going back a bit, people didn't... could only read aloud. There's no silent reading. So around in the time of ancient Greece, there was no silent reading. And right up till, you know, a few hundred AD, in fact. And so it's only that people were going back and saying, there was a scene where Aristotle had taught Alexander the Great something to do with reading. Scratch your head. What is it? What is it? And then there's a few things, and then Alexander the Great's on the battlefield, and someone runs up and says, "Here's a letter from your mother," and everyone gathers around to read, to listen. And Alexander the Great does something. He reads it and understands it without speaking. And there's things like this clue that the commentators say we're so used to people reading without speaking. It's only backwards that you actually find these little tippets of where people can read silently. So not everyone could read silently, only a few gifted people could read silently. And I think it was Augustus was going up. You know, this is where the Roman Empire was just being swept up by the Vandals and all that type of stuff. But there was a Bishop Ambrose, and he went up and he said, "Oh, Bishop Ambrose looked at this piece of paper and understood it without speaking. I wonder what that was." And then the rest of Augustus' thing, he didn't ever refer to this again. He just really didn't understand it. But this is an important thing. In public meetings, which we're getting back to, and Augustus was a fantastic debater, and from what I read and understand, he would have had some henchmen in there to say, "Yes, yes, that's right." And the thing is that back then, if you spoke a debate and you won a debate, people wouldn't be able to work their way around and say, "Oh, I disagree with that privately. I disagree with that." They would. It's the ideas were not private; they were public. And there was this sort of public understanding of an idea that bound everyone together, because that's what was said. So now what's happened is that we've got private reading, and people are becoming a bit more sophisticated. They read it, and because they've got their own voice in their head, their own little community in their own head, they can read things silently a whole lot of different ways from when someone reads aloud, and everyone has this communal belief. So that sort of makes sense. There's a we're not in a solid age. We're in this age where if you say something now, we can sort of read silently. But also, if we say something, you don't necessarily mean it. Whereas earlier on, it's what you said was actually meant, and you can sort of see the libel and slander and all these ideas come across, and it's getting really confusing now, so with social media and people saying things, and people actually getting quite upset from a you know, what's said on a mobile phone or things like that. So it's really coming along, and what's happening now is that you know, life has picked up. Look, we do in a few years what people would have done in 50 years. And so the actual infrastructure that we bring into promise making and promise control and the complexity of it is not keeping pace with our society. And so we do need this artificial intelligence to actually come in and police and befriend us, come across. And we still have elements of the old thing. We have a public meeting where we have this august thing, and it's said, and it's sort of, because it's said and someone can get it up at a public meeting and it's a group meeting, it's somehow fixed, even though the meeting may be incorrectly supported and all the procedures may not be right. But there's this public meeting. There's sort of like there's two aspects to how things happen outside legislation and contracts. One is these public meetings where everyone gets together, and I thought we all agreed on it. You know, what does that technically mean? We as a group all agreed that we'd do this. Where is that coming from? That's coming from really ancient time. The other aspect is that when, and it's definitely here in Australia, when someone gets up and they start clearing a road to a project, people suddenly give up. They say, oh, that's over. There's nothing we can do now. They've begun to spend our money building that road. It's sort of like, I'm sure there's other examples of how that works, that when someone starts to change the locks or put up the party streams or do things which symbolically shut things down. So there's all these cultural things which reinforce a promise, which all, so there's all these things can happen after a promise has happened. All these other things can dilute the importance of the decision that you made. Now, I've talked about there was a thought of religion which in the past opened things up, and now we have this artificial intelligence or technology worship to think, look, perhaps we might be able to do this. What really want to touch on is the idea of synthetic intelligence. Now, as with all these things, with its artificial intelligence, synthetic intelligence, or someone who's just really, really good at their job and can actually hold people to account, say like the press, we had the idea that the press would be able to do it, but or the press or the unions will hold people to account, and obviously it doesn't. These things can be gamed and doesn't. But the actual concept in there is actually holding someone to account, holding something to account that... It's not saying it's right or wrong, but if you do something, the people who are affected know about it in a professional, timely manner, which is perhaps not what you necessarily would want to do if you want to actually rearrange the tiles in your room, the pieces on your promise board. You want to have the ability to do that in the twilight when no one's watching. But the idea of this synthetic intelligence, I don't take it as it's a method of doing it, but it's a consequence of doing it, but it's not necessarily the actual complete logic of why we should do it and how we're doing it and what we're trying to do. It's just one method of doing it. So synthetic intelligence, I call, is that we've got human thought, and if we can actually break that human thought and have it mathematically expressed, we then create, rather than a thought with just the end impact, we can actually look at it as a structure from a beginning to end and actually enter into that structure and add to it. So I don't know if people can see... People tend to like look at a conclusion, but if we look at how people got to conclusion and look at each of those, how do we get to conclusion as a building block that we can then build from those building blocks, for we can create a conclusion space, and how that operates, it's what I call synthetic intelligence, is that we start off with a question, and I have a response. And then I have another question to that, and I have another response. As I really get to probe and know something, you sit down and you say, well, what's happening here? You ask a question, response back. But what can happen is that I start off with a question, and I can say, look, here are three or four responses. It's a pretty weird light. That must be some sort of helicopter flying low over the Blue Mountains up the top. So I can have three or four responses. Now, what the human intelligence will say, well, pick me the most important response. Computers and intelligent software can say, well, let's pick up all the responses. Okay. And then you can ask a question. But you can ask questions for all those things. In fact, you can ask multiple questions and you can get multiple responses. And before long, you've got absolutely a mind-bogglingly intense understanding of what's going on. Now, this is very much important for, say, if you're taking a witness statement at a crime from different people, you can sort of follow up different things, and the computer can actually take the two statements and actually compute them almost in real time and solve crimes in real time, sort of pull apart stories very, very quickly using this thing. But what you can do is that you can come up to a a question like, in this case, or how are we going to park in this area? And this person says, well, it's bad at the moment, but I promise that I will write to the government and get some parking built for you. So that's over. Let's move on to the next issue. So that's a question and answer. And then based on that, you ask more questions, but you assume that answer is correct. So what we do this with this synthetic intelligence for that promise, you actually just put that the name of that person whose solution in square brackets. It's sort of like a marker. And what happens is that in the app, which produces the record of thought and recording of everything that's done, there's a button called Promises, Commitments. And you press down and you say, this person here is committed to this, this, and this. And you just, so it's drop down of Joe Bloggs, so Sam, something like that, Samantha, this, and you just click on it and you see their commitments. Now, instantly, it comes across, you'll see a list of commitments and you can look at those commitments and certainly make sure that the commitments aren't contradictory. But furthermore, when you go back, and you have to modify it, that this person is no longer holding to that commitment, it then creates an alert to all the descendants, everyone else who's made commitments or plans based on this person's promise. People have said, yes, we will allow this to happen, I will have to... There are these incredibly weird lights. I've never seen anything like that come across here. But it's a helicopter. I can actually hear it. It's a fairly high altitude helicopter. What often happens is that people get lost in the Blue Mountains at night, and they just have these helicopters droning up and down, looking for people. But normally they just have these infrared cameras, which can actually pick up people and heat and stuff like that. Okay, and getting back to it. There is a method of doing it, and what's going to happen is the lessons that I'm coming up will be bound to apps, which are basically this synthetic intelligence to lock them. And so it's just you're one step away from actually being able to use this as a politician promise track. And fortunately, the way that I've discussed this, I don't have to actually go and discuss it, and I've actually spared you the me wheezing as I go up this hill. I've given myself a bit of a break as I talk about it. The issue here is, yes, the answer is yes, synthetic intelligence can do it, but it's not, I don't like it. It's the fact is that human history has been changing, and it's been we've been able to do more and more. You know, someone can produce, say something, and we can do pour concrete, get chemicals, get computers, get things moving really rapidly. So we've got a potential to do great good, great evil, and great people can rip people off at unheard of rates doing it. And what's been happening is that slowly the technology is going up, our standard of proof, our standard of accountability is slowly, slowly increasing. One person, someone woke up and said, look, there's double entry accounting. Someone else said, look, I'm going to have blockchain. You get all these little things beginning to come up across. And so this is sort of like the blockchain. It's not quite, but it is. It is actually a ledger of promises, a ledger of thought and promises. But it's an open ledger to come across. I suppose it's quite almost the opposite end of blockchain. It's completely hackable because that's what you want to have it. Look, thanks a lot for listening, and I'll get on to doing this unthinkable thing of climbing up this 200-meter roadway. It's about a kilometer walk and 200 meters up, so it's quite a thing. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll get back onto the standard reading of the Japanese war stories at this point in time. Thanks for listening. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.